Philadelphia, Philadelphia, are you ready? City of brotherly love, home of smoking Joe Frazier. Come on. It's about that time, FetLifeStation.com. Philly Fridays, baby, come on.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Thank you so much for tuning in to FetLife Station Internet Radio. You are listening to the Life Without Parole Show, LWAP Radio. I'm Stacey Mandel in Philadelphia, where it's definitely still a Philly thing. And I have the honor of co-hosting the show with Robert Gross, a.k.a. Reentry Rob, who is almost 27 years down on a Life Without Parole sentence at SCI Phoenix. And today is 7-7, July 7th, 7-7, which means it's a fortuitous Friday. We are bringing you not just one, not two, but three men serving life without parole from inside the walls of SCI Phoenix. But first, Reentry Rob is here on the line right now to lead us on our expedition this morning. Morning, Rob.
Morning. Good morning. Morning. Today, like you said, I'm hyped for the show. You hear me, Stacey? first time ever. Like, you know, I mean, we should be hyped.
First time ever, you're on from the start.
Oh yeah, but I also to have four individuals, you know, at the same time, like
this
being for
FBI,
Philadelphia and
Phoenix
for every state
correctional
that's listening,
institution.
You know,
this
to be able
subject to recording and monitoring.
You know, to get everything that you need to hear live from behind these walls. You know, I'm just hyped, man. I'm extremely hyped. For some time now, Stace, you know that we've been getting a lot of requests and questions pertaining to three particular issues. One would be that brain science behind the development continuing into the mid-20s, which will be covered by, which you'll be interviewing these men, Mr. BC, Mr. Brian Charles. Another question has been presented itself many times has been second-degree murder. And when will there finally be some type of resolution to the draconian Pennsylvania felony murder statute? You know, it's been a lot of talks. You know, we just had Celeste and Mrs. Maria Garner from FAM on here, and they were talking about, you know, how there's some futures legislation going to be presented. So it's a lot of talks in many arenas about that. And lastly, would be many have asked why isn't there a conviction integrity unit in every Pennsylvania county that basically mirrors Philadelphia's? You know, since 2019, since Krasin took office, there's been 30 something, maybe close to 40, who have overturned their convictions or who've actually proved that they were actually innocent of a crime. And the reason that these units are super important, many of the individuals who are incarcerated are indigent, or families are blue collar families that just don't have the financial means to
support
them.
This is a call from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
As far as litigation goes, legal wise. So these units investigate your case, you know, they go out, you know, and do the work. And even though it's a small unit in Philadelphia, they're doing some great work. And many Pennsylvanians don't know that we don't have those units in other counties across the United States, maybe one other. And we just want to go in and have something where brother and the one that will be presenting that will be Brother T, Terrence Graham.
Right.
He'll be handling that department. And since this week's show was like more informative than personal, like usually, I guess you're the interviewer most times, and it's kind of like this back and forth where we really get to know the men and the families. This is more on the long lines of to make sure that we educate the general public on exactly these three topics in general. The more we know, the better we know how to serve. You know.
Right. Yes, I have a feeling I won't be we won't be conversing too much. I'll just be making space and letting them, you know, shine their expertise out there. I'm sure they have a lot to say.
Yeah. But since they don't, since you won't be able to do that process that you do such a great job at, I'm going to go ahead and just give you just a little brief synopsis of these men, right? I know all three individuals very well. These men not only educate themselves, you know, during their time incarcerated, but, you know, they also have transformed their lives. And two of them are also on the Groves Notebook. So if you want to learn a little more about them and you want to read into their bio, you know, what they've done since they've been incarcerated, their educational background and such, stuff like that, you can do that. They also just transform their lives as a whole. I worked with BC and George in the law library for many years, where they're still employed. I no longer work there. I work within the reentry office within the institution. And Brother T, that's Brother Graham that you'll be interviewing. He's a fixture in the law library. You would think that he lived in the actual law library. But us four men, you know, not only fight for personal freedom, but also aid others with theirs. You know, they're like-minded individuals. I just enjoy building with because of you know, their character. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You have to pick the people you choose to spend your time with carefully.
Yeah. I was trying to let somebody know I'm speaking. I'm versed in the law, but these three men that you're going to be interviewing today, these men are practicing attorneys. Like, these dudes, they should have Esquire placed behind their names. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. States.
Yeah.
But
like Charlie Diggs.
Charlie, another one. Yeah. States.
It's okay. This is also real life. This is real prison life.
Yeah, this is what's going on right now. We got a lot going on right now.
But, we can hear it a little bit.
Yeah. Stace, by the way, I also wanted to let you know that I was invited to take part in that study by Sam Houston State University and George Mason University. And I wanted to go ahead and speak to that a little bit, you know, while we got our listeners listening. They are interested in understanding more about living and working in prisons and jails across the United States. So on today at 1 o'clock, I will be going down there and getting interviewed by these researchers. And what they want to do is they're kind of studying people and how we live and work inside of prisons. And they want to go ahead and examine both sides, both groups, and just try to understand the perspectives, you know, of everyone. So I'm super hyped for that.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, because, you know, usually reentry lab don't get invited to those type of events because, you know, I'm sort of like, you know, the voice for the, you know, for those who have this type of time. And it's not like I go down and throw anybody under the bus, but I think, it, you know, when you're down there, you need the right people to shed light on certain issues. Mm-hmm. And not to pat myself on the back, I just feel as though I'm super qualified for that position.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. You go.
I wanted to take the time to stage to send my heartfelt condolences to all those lost loved ones who were affected by that senseless violence over the July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I don't know how to explain it. It makes no logical sense. I think next week when we get Mr. Brandon Flood on the show, he's scheduled, and hopefully he will be able to make it. You know, he's from Operation Ceasefire PA, and I want to thank you on Bassine for making that happen, you know, for to have Brandon Flood on the show. And I think that's something that we need to dive deep in, you know, and try to find out, like, what organizations on the street, what are they doing to try to go ahead and combat this current this epidemic that we're going through. Yeah. And I think that my thing is, our thing should be, how are we working from the outside to the inside and then the inside to the outside? You know, Stace, you hear me many times speak about how 95% of the people that are incarcerated at some point or another will be released. And it's not only important for their personal success, but also the success of the communities that they will be returning to. So education, we speak about this every week. Education is key. knowledge is key. Resources is key. I think if we focus more on that, not only on the inside, but also on the outside, this would deter people from ever putting a gun in their hand. You know, sometimes we sit down and we're in circles on the inside and we talk about, we sit down with the young boys. We just actually started this mentoring group here at the facility. And we want to know more about what's going on with you. What's your mindset when you think about going out and committing these violent acts? And Stace, going back when I was home, a lot of the crime and violence was driven by monetary value. It was either over drug proceeds or get money on the street. These young men and women, for that matter, are just killing just for respect and for notoriety. And I think that this is, it's just, so we have to dive a little deeper. This is a mental health thing we're talking about. And you speak to this all the time, you know, where we got to get a little deeper, you know, and, I'm just looking forward to next week and getting them on the show and seeing what we can go ahead and tie in.
Yeah, we are. We are. It's a combination. It seems to me, from the people that I speak with anyway, and the communities that I spend time in so far, it seems to me from my limited vantage point of the combination of generation upon generation being, of generational needs not being met, basic needs not being met, and then having to survive in your own way, you know, and then on top of it, there's trauma, there's hurt, there are wounds that are happening, physical violence, and also, you know, non-physical violence. And just when you combine all of that, it's, you know, like you said, that includes mental health, but it's way, way vaster than that. And it's,
you have 1 minute left.
We need all hands on deck.
It's systemic, and I think that's what we need to dive into. But historical show today, you ain't going to hear four prisoners serving life without incarceration that fight not only for their personal freedom, but for the freedom of others on one show coming live. And good luck. There's some good men. Stace, enjoy the interviews.
You did a great job today, Rob.
Thank you. I want to tell the Philadelphians, man, stay safe out there, man, you know. Peace and blessings to all. Reentry Rob, you know, unrehearsed because, you know, I actually live it. God bless, man, and be safe out there.
Thank you. It's an honor to co-host the show with you. I really mean it.
Of course, of course.
Uh-huh. And looking forward to speaking with the men.
No
Take
doubt.
Good care. Good luck with your interview today.
Oh,
that's
ain't
exciting.
No doubt.
Thank
knock
you for
out.
Using Securus. Goodbye.
Talk to you soon. So, OWAP listeners, don't go anywhere. When we come back, we are going to have on Mr. George Fraticelli from behind the walls of SCI Phoenix. So we'll take a quick musical break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, listeners. This is Life Without Parole Radio. I'm going to be interviewing Mr. George Fraticelli from SCI Phoenix. Good morning, George.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you so much for coming on the Life Without Parole show.
It's a pleasure to be on.
So let's just get into it, since time is of the essence. George, can you tell us, what is felony murder?
Sure. I just want to briefly just say a few words about Pennsylvania and their felony murder laws. For decades, Pennsylvania has been a among the most heavily incarcerated states in the country. While the numbers have been trending down a little bit in recent years, data from the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections Bureau of Planning and Research and Statistics indicate that the Department of Corrections has a total residential population of 47,959 people as of September 30th, 2019. On that date, 5,536 people were serving life without the possibility of parole sentences or LWOP, the second highest population in the country. And of those, 1,166 had been sentenced to life without the possibility of parole for felony murder. Many of the individuals convicted of this offense never committed the actual murder, knew a murder would occur, or had a specific intent to kill. Unlike those convicted of capital murder, individuals convicted of this offense are never afforded a penalty hearing where a sentencing judge can consider aggravating and mitigating factors in order to impose an appropriate penalty for the offense. One of the fundamental principles of justice is that we punish people for the crimes they commit or intend to commit. Pennsylvania's current felony murder laws violates those basic fundamental principles of justice. What I've been noticing recently, however, is that many Pennsylvanians are realizing the injustice of these laws. Recently, the Susquehanna Polling and Research released a poll on February 23rd, 2023, revealing that 79% of Pennsylvanians, including the District Attorneys Association, support changing the state's mandatory life without parole sentence for those convicted of felony murder. After studying felony murder data for almost 29 years, this is the first time there has been such an overwhelming support for such reforms. Your question was, what is felony murder? And I want to talk a little bit about that, because there's often a lot of people ask that question but have no real clear answer of what felony murder is.
Wait a minute. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Okay.
Because there's no clear way of defining what felony murder is. Felony murder does not describe an act, but rather it describes a situation. Almost like every other crime, a second-degree murder, or as it's often referred to, felony murder, applies when someone dies related to an event that is classified as a felony. The death that occurs related to that felony does not have to be intentional and can be entirely accidental. Over the years, I've met many individuals who have been convicted of felony murder, who've had these same situations and circumstances and have served decades in prison. I just want to name a few of these examples. For example, Leroy Cotton is an individual who was recently commuted. He had a case where he was involved in an altercation with an individual on the block. And as he had this altercation with this individual suffered a heart attack and later died as a result of that heart attack. And because of that altercation and because something was taken from this person who had a heart attack, he was convicted of felony murder and was given a life sentence. Another example is the Evans brothers, who committed a robbery with an inoperative shotgun. And while they were committing this robbery, the individual that was being robbed had a heart attack and tragically passed away. And these two brothers spent decades of their lives in prison. They were also recently convicted. Another case was that of Francisco Mojica, who received a life sentence also for felony murder for a robbery that occurred that his brother committed inside of an apartment while he was outside and didn't know that a robbery was occurring. And when the crime occurred, his brother, after they were arrested, pleaded guilty to third-degree murder. And Francisco decided, you know what, I'm going to go to trial because I didn't take this person's life and I shouldn't do the
this
same
is a call
amount
from
of time.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
And as a result of going to trial, he was convicted of felony murder and received a life sentence while his brother was convicted of third-degree murder, and I believe he did 10 years in prison, unlike his brother, who served a life sentence. So to clarify the point, felony murder describes a situation where a felony occurs, and in the midst of that felony, someone died either accidentally or unintentionally.
Yeah. Okay. I also want to just clarify for our listeners that there's a lot of noise in the background, and that's on your end, and just to remind everyone that prison is a really chaotic place, and this is the show. This is, we are, you are here with us from behind prison walls, and you know, we're trying to hang on to every word that you say. We appreciate you being here. So can you give us some history, if there's more history, because you gave us some, on the current felony murder laws?
Sure. What's responsible for the current felony murder laws was House Bill 1060. And this House bill was introduced to the General Assembly and signed into law by former Governor Milton Schaaf in 1974, without ever considering the potential implications that such legislation would create. And, of course, when this law was passed, it was passed due to an emotional response as a result of crime that was increasing in the city. And as a result of these laws, it changed the sentence for felony murder to life without the possibility of parole. The previous felony murder law, now repealed, carried a maximum of 20 years for first-time offenders. And that former statute was Title 18, subsection 4701. Now those individuals convicted of felony murder are sentenced to life without the possibility of parole, or as I like to refer to it, death by incarceration. There are only two ways that a person convicted of life without the possibility of parole can be released in Pennsylvania if they are unsuccessful on their appeals. One way is commutation. Now, commutation has to pass through a whole series of events, and the applicant has to receive a unanimous 5-0 vote, which is very difficult in Pennsylvania. And very few people, as you can see from statistical data, were commuted after Reginald McFadden committed his crime. And this has resulted in barely few individuals getting commuted. And the other way that you can be released on, besides the commutation process, is death. There's no other option.
Yeah. So what does transferred intent mean?
Transferred intent. Okay, I like to refer to transferred intent as the legal fiction of transferred intent. Transferred intent is something that's based on the idea that one engages in a dangerous felony should understand the risk that the victim of the felony could be killed even by a confederate. Felony murder applies equally to all individuals involved in the event, from the individual called the principal, who is most directly causes the death of the victim, to anyone who participates at any point in the felony. So in other words, transferred intent is where the intent of the principal is passed on to everyone involved in the crime. These others are often called accomplices, who could have stood outside of a convenience store as a lookout to a robbery that escalated and resulted in someone's death, or it could have been someone who drove the getaway car.
Wait, George? Did you say, what did you call that person?
The accomplice.
Okay, couldn't hear you. Okay, got it.
Oh, yeah. And these individuals could have helped plan the felony with no idea that a gun or weapons would be involved. They're not excluded from these felony murder laws and are punished just as the person who committed the murder. The prosecution must only prove that the individual had intended to participate in the felony, not that they expected it to escalate into the loss of life. So all they have to show is basically that individual was involved and he knew that this was going to happen. And because of that knowledge, he is just as guilty as the principal.
Yeah. All right. So why are those who are convicted of felony murder, why are they sentenced to this mandatory life without the possibility of parole sentence?
Well, this has to do primarily with the statutes and the laws that were passed that impose a mandatory life without parole sentence for the offense. I like to call this a blanket sentencing policy. Unlike most states with distinct felony murder laws and distinct felony murder statutes with different levels of culpability, in Pennsylvania, life without the possibility of parole is the only sentence that can be imposed for all offenders. Pennsylvania is one of the few states in the country where during sentencing, judges and juries are not allowed by law to consider considered the circumstances of a crime or any specific conduct about the individual. Judges have no discretion to consider the level of an individual's involvement or culpability, their age, and or any other factors contributing as to why they acted the way they did, all which are routinely considered for death penalty deliberation and sentencing from those crimes. The Supreme Court has repeatedly said that doing so is what justice generally requires. So a judge basically has his hands tied and cannot consider any factors at all. A person's age, why they committed the crime, any of those factors. And this is why individuals are just sentenced to a mandatory life without parole sentence. I've heard and I've read transcripts, sentencing transcripts from many individuals where the judge is imposing sentence upon that individual, and they ask if the judge or the court can have mercy upon them. And I've read it repeatedly. The only thing I can impose is what is the mandatory sentence of life without the possibility of parole.
Yeah.
And that's an unfortunate thing for a lot of individuals.
Yeah, the minimum is mandatory. And I mean, I've heard that, you know, first of all, it is cheaper. It's much more costly than a trial. I've also heard that this was an alternative to, you know, it was quote unquote to be deemed, you know, less harsh than a death sentence. Do you have any comments about those two
factors? I believe that this sentence is the same as a death sentence, but it's one of attrition where you slowly die in prison. An individual that is sentenced to life without the possibility of parole means just that individual will die in prison unless he is released through commutation or unless he dies. There's no other way out when a person has been sentenced if you're not successful in court. Surprisingly, I've had the opportunity to be in meetings with legislators who have come in and have spoken to us. And when we begin to explain that there are individuals in this room who have been incarcerated for 30, 35 years without ever taking a life, who were accomplices in the crime, they could not believe what they were hearing. Many of those legislators...
You have 1 minute left.
...stated, well, I never believed that was possible for someone to spend their life in prison without taking a life.
Yeah. Thank you so much, George.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
We're lucky to have you. Sending peace your way. I don't have, you know, enough words to express what I feel, but it was really nice to connect with you. And I wish you well.
I wish you well, and thank you very much.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Take good care.
Good morning. All right. Bye-bye.
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 Welcome back to Life Without Parole Radio. I'm going to queue up my phone line here with Mr. Brian Charles, and we'll get into our interview.
Good morning, Brian. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good, good. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Sure.
Yep. We have some questions for you. So as it relates to those who are between the ages of 18 to 25, can you tell us why you believe that this problem affects a large enough demographic of the Pennsylvania prison population that it would have a meaningful impact in criminal justice reform?
Well, that's a great question. So for a number of years, there's been significant studies by different groups kind of compiling this sort of data in terms of how many people are impacted within that particular age group. And from 2016, one of the bigger studies that brought forth some really good information was from the Abolitionist Law Center. They did a study that was entitled, if I'm not mistaken, A Way Home or A Way Out. And from that study, it brought forth information that said that over 51% of the DVI population in Pennsylvania, and for those that aren't familiar with that terminology, DVI, just death by incarceration, is just a secondary way of saying life without the possibility of parole. But those who are serving DVI sentences in Pennsylvania, it's approximately 51% of the 5,000 plus people who are serving those sentences came to prison between that age group. And I think that that's a significant number just from that particular demographic. When we look at how many people came to prison during that age group, we have to then consider that isn't limited to just people with DVI. That also encompasses people who have, for example, and there's a few of them too, what we call de facto or virtual license. So when people are sentenced to 100 to 200 years, it isn't realistic that a person will live out that sentence, though in effect they too don't have DVI sentence. And the larger portion is all of those who were sentenced between that age group. And the numbers are alarming.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution. This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
So, four counties in particular in Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Allegheny, Delaware, and Dauphin, per capita, have the highest numbers of 18 through 25 demographics. And at the time of that previous study, Philadelphia was at 57%, Allegheny was at 55%, and Delaware County was at 56, almost 57, and Dauphin County was almost 56%. So when we consider that, I think that that is a large number of those demographics of DVI citizens.
Yeah.
That should be given some consideration, sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, what's the basis for which this second chance consideration should be given, you know, towards those whose crimes were committed when they were between 18 to 25, you know, by legislators, criminal justice policymakers in PA, with the enactment of new laws, policies, procedures, and so forth?
So the reason why this has even become a large part of discussion with this sort of terminology, 18 to 25, it stems from the judicial decision from our United States Supreme Court. So over the past, let's just say 20 years, there's been a number of significant decisions that changed the landscape of those youthful offenders. And one of the earlier decisions was Roper versus Simmons. And there was a lot of neuroscience and social science that was kind of delivered to the court that kind of moved them towards making the decisions that they made. And one of the more recent ones was Miller versus Alabama that said that sentencing juveniles to life without parole unconstitutional.
SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
Sentencing juveniles to life without parole without certain guardrails and considerations taken in place first was unconstitutional. But in those decisions, so much neuroscience came forth towards the court that actually really made them make the decisions that they made.
Yeah.
So those were judicial decisions, and that's the big, you know, difference here. In our state, we've often looked at those decisions when we looked at how do we consider changing the needle for 18 to 25. What is ignored is that in those decisions, the neuroscience and the court never said that there was a demarcation in those who were over 18 or under 18. But what's important is that the judicial decision basically hit on those litigants who were before the court. Supreme Courts don't often make decisions more broader than the litigants before them. So therefore, it was naturally kept to those under 18. But the sign specifically said, and the court said, that there is no bright cutoff line at the age of 18. So people always looked at the judicial way of us trying to see how do we expand the age group to what the sign says that it should be. And judicially, we are kind of handcuffed to the Miller decision, which was limited to those up to 18. But the sign clearly says that it goes far beyond. So politically, I think that we can make changes through the legislature, not through the judiciary system, but through our legislators to adhere to and acknowledge this science that has been developed over decades and continues to be supported and grown, that there should be some considerations because the brain is similarly to those who are under 18.
Yeah.
So I think that having legislative changes would be where we need to go.
Okay, so building on the legislative changes, what kinds of solutions might you be able to identify or do you suggest or propose to legislators, policymakers, if any?
So, for example, right now, I think that this would be a prime time to kind of have these sorts of sensible discussions with our legislators and criminal justice policymakers, whether that be the sentencing on commission on sentencing, Commission on Crime and Delinquency, both chambers of our legislators, to see how do we bring about legislation through a House bill or a Senate bill to make these sort of considerations to allow for those who came to prison, their sentences were committed, their crimes were committed during that age frame, to see how do we look at who they are today? Because the science says that people tend to grow out of this sort of criminal behaviors and criminal mindset. And we need to take a view of who they are today because it doesn't serve our criminal justice system well when we are just looking at a snapshot of a person 20, 30, 40, in some cases 50 years prior and thinking that that one incident defines a person for the eternity of their lives when we know that just humans just don't develop that way. We tend to grow and evolve to, you know, better people. But people should have an opportunity to show that they have evolved and had some rehabilitation and self-transformation to become a better person today. And I think that that should be some discussions that we have and how we bring forth bills to bring forth change.
So I'm curious.
I have actually drafted a bill for that if anyone is eager to even see what that could look like.
You've drafted a bill, you say?
Yes, I have a bill drafted and ready to be viewed to see, you know, what legislators would even consider. Sure, I do.
Are you planning on getting it to anyone?
I would love for anyone to take a look at it, whether it's a policymaker, a legislature, attorney, anyone who's open to seeing it, you know, what can be built upon it, and see where it can go. Sure.
Okay, let's see what comes of this. I'm curious, does this problem, this particular issue with regard to age and the neuroscience on our brains, does this affect you directly? Has it affected you personally?
Sure, it does. I came to prison when I was 21 years old, and now I'm 51 years old. So I have 30 years incarceration, and I can absolutely attest that the young, immature, impulsive kid who I was 30 years ago is certainly not the person who I am today in terms of my decision-making, in terms of my ability to assess how things affect other people and not just living in the moment. Those are things that we don't necessarily take into consideration, you know, in our youth and adolescence, but those are absolutely things that I do consider today, and I'm far better at assessing and making better life decisions that affect me and others. And over these years, I've absolutely made tantamount strides to become a better human being and individual. So I think that it affects me square on. I was within that age group. Again, I came to prison. I was 21. And sure, there's a lot to be said about guys who are able to make these self-transformations in prison, because oftentimes it isn't always rehabilitation, because for lifers in Pennsylvania, certain policies prevent lifers from even getting into certain programming. So some of it has to come from within. You have to want it and try to go get it outside of what's even being offered. So sure.
You're saying even when you're serving a life sentence, that there is programming and opportunity inside the prison walls that you are automatically rejected from because of your sentence?
Yes. Unfortunately, there's a department policy that limits lifers and long-termers, specifically lifers, from being in programming. So lifers are limited to only a 10% of whether it's academic or vocational or therapeutic programming. So if you have, for example, a class of 10 and only one of them are to be a lifer, and that doesn't mandate that a lifer will be, it just says a lifer can be up to 10%. So that's, you know, incredibly limiting.
I didn't know that.
Sure.
Go ahead. You were saying that's really limiting.
Yes, it does really limit, you know, what a lifer can do while he's in prison, just in terms of the programming that's available. And it's something that's overlooked, and I think it is something that we can...
You have 1 minute left.
...have someone take a look at.
Wow. Okay, Brian, is there anything else that you'd like to say before we have to end? This has been a very enlightening conversation.
Sure. Anyone that's interested in having further dialogue with me, I'll leave my information with Stacey. I have an email at bcharles1073@gmail.com. And you can reach me directly through Smart Communications at the DOC. And I thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak about these important topics.
Well, you're the expert. No one better qualified than you. I'm sure you've done your homework.
I have.
Thank you very much.
Again.
Thank you for getting to the phone and for sharing your perspective and your knowledge with us.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
Take good care.
Is serving at SCI. Tuned, we'll be right back.
Love and emotion endlessly, cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me, cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, we're going home.
You're listening to About Parole. This is Stacey Mandel, and I'm going to get on the line. Parents, I'm here.
Good morning, Terrence. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well over here. Thanks so much for joining us. So let's just get into it, since time is of the essence. Can you please give our listeners a brief introduction of yourself, your full name, what you'll be presenting the Life Without Parole listeners with today as well?
Okay, my name is Terrence Graham. I'm 47 years old. I've been incarcerated for 13 years of a life without parole sentence. My conviction and sentence came from the Court of Common Pleas of Washington County, Pennsylvania. I'm here to speak on the importance of the CYU and the review of criminal cases and why it's needed in other counties and PA.
So can you explain, please, what the CIU acronym actually stands for, and what the functions of what are the functions of that particular acronym?
Okay, the CYU is the Conviction Integrity Unit, headed by Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner, which investigates cases that resulted in convictions that where corruption was at the root of it, be it prosecutorial misconduct, police misconduct, and the like. They bring this information before the court and advocate for the benefit of those who have fallen victim to wrongful actions of those who sought convictions at any cost.
So do you have some history on the CIU and the work that the unit's accomplished since District Attorney Krasner has taken office?
Yes. Since 1989, roughly 3,000 people have been exonerated in the United States. 131 of those people are from Pennsylvania. Roughly 35 of those people have come since 2018 when Krasner revamped the Conviction Integrity Unit. This unit has been dredging up dirt that has been hidden since the 70s up until now. Honestly, there's no telling how many victims there are of the corrupt system that Krasner is seeking to correct.
And how have you personally been affected by the CIU? Because it seems like you feel, you know, compelled to speak about this.
Well, the problem is I haven't been affected by it. See, again, I'm not from Philadelphia, so this unit does not help me or others similarly situated. The prime example of corruption I can speak about is former Washington County Judge Paul M. Pazansky.
Can you say that name again a little louder?
Judge Paul M. Pazansky. That's P-O-Z-O-N-S-K-Y.
This is a call from SCI Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
From October or early November of 2010, continuing through January of 2012, Pazansky exploited his position as a judge to order police to bring cocaine seized as evidence to the courtroom. Then he ordered the drugs to be stored in his chambers. Then, when his staff wasn't present, he sold quantities of the cocaine for his personal use. To hide what he had done, he replaced the cocaine with baking soda. And what had brought him under suspicion was that he issued destruction orders for the evidence that he had tampered with. This led to Pazansky being charged with 6 criminal counts related to these actions, to which he pled guilty and served 30 days in county jail on work release, followed by a period of probation. But he was disbarred. It came to light that he used cocaine for the better part of 30 years. Yet, his advocates argued that he did not have an addiction problem. Pazansky and his fellow jurists stated that Pazansky was never under the influence of cocaine while on the bench. However, it was when he was on the bench that the influence of cocaine drove him to order police to bring the drugs to him so that he could steal it for his personal use. To quote the deputy attorney general that prosecuted the former judge, Pazansky turned the courthouse or courtroom into his stash house and basically made law enforcement his private suppliers of cocaine. The shocking and willful abuse of his office demonstrates Pazansky's contemptuous disrespect for the very rule of law itself. And I say that everyone who came before this judge during this time frame suffered a violation of due process in a major way.
Okay. So what would you...
from SCI, Phoenix State Correctional Institution.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
What would you like to see done with this avenue of relief? And who or what could ultimately help those affected achieve this goal?
Well, for starters, I feel that it's shocking that this type of thing... only seems to matter in only one out of 67 counties in Pennsylvania. In Philadelphia, a cop lying can get you a second chance. But in Washington County, a judge committing crimes to feed his cocaine habit means nothing. Conviction integrity units should be in place in every county. And those who are doing the review should be independent of the office of the prosecution, just to keep it fair. I believe that we need more progressively minded candidates to run for the district attorney seat in other counties. And our family members have to vote them in. However, once the ballot is cast, the candidate must be held to his word to correct what has been done wrong. Also, our newly elected governor, Josh Shapiro, spoke to adding these same units in several counties across PA while he was acting attorney general. To this date, the only one that I know of is the one in Allegheny County, which serves the Pittsburgh area. This is the only new addition that seeks to mirror what is taking place in Philadelphia.
Well, this has been enlightening. And
I was hoping that
a little a bit disheartening. But you know, knowledge is power.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
Yep.
The reason I wanted to speak on this is because so few people know about this judge because it happens in such a small county. Once things like this happen in counties like this, it's, when it's over, it's swept under a rug and nobody else knows about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Graham, is there anything else that you'd like to say while you have the airwaves? You're welcome to.
Well, at this point, I just, before we reach the close of this, I would like to most certainly thank you for the opportunity to be heard. I would like to send my gratitude to Suav, who didn't forget who the people are he left behind, and for the platform to be able to speak, the opportunity to be heard when you're representing yourself in court or called a pro se litigant is often a very hard one. So for the chance to be able to speak, for the chance to be able to be heard, not just by me, but for everyone else who's been able to be heard on this platform, I extend to my gratitude.
Of course. We appreciate you coming on the show, getting to the phone. Thank you for sharing, and I wish you peace.
Thank you.
Yep.
Have a good
Take good care, Mr. Graham. Take good care.
All
right.
Bye-bye.
Life Without Parole. This brings us to the end of Up Radio. So we invite you to join us every Friday, same place, time, 9 to 10 a.m. And again, the show is an extension of the Grow Real Book, which is a Facebook page. It can be found on Facebook. If you know someone, would like to submit their profile to the Groves Notebook, directions are on there. And I'd like to wrap up by giving some contact information for Rob Groves, Reentry Rob. You can contact him at robertgroves731@gmail.com or through the connectnetwork.com. You can contact me at Big Mindfulness and Meditation at Your Big Mind on Instagram. We want to thank Lester Keon at FetLife Station. And we hope everyone has a really safe and peaceful weekend. And we'll see you back next week. Peace out, everyone.
You know it. I know exactly who you could be. Just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on. Home. It's hard to do these things alone. Just hold on, we're going home. Oh, oh, oh. I got my eyes on you. You're everything that I see. I want your high love and emotion endlessly. I can't get over you. You left your mark on me. I want your high love and emotion. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. You act so different around me. Cause you're a good girl and you know it. I know exactly who you could be. So just hold on, we're going home. Just hold on, we're going home. Alone. Just hold on, we're going home.
Going home. Oh, oh, oh. Going home. You're the girl. going home. Just hold on.